Folks, it's altcoin season right now. We're taking off. Everything's mooning. Everything's going up. Get on the crypto, but on a better note, you're here to episode 60 on the bus with just your bus owner and your bus driver. We're here in Santiago, Chile, and we're about to get this show on the road. But
is it actually alt season?
It's alt season. We're back.
Alt season is the opposite of festival season, where festival season never ends. Alt season, you don't know when it's coming, and when you're there, you better hop on.
This bus season, it's coming to a close. Yes, season one, we're coming to it. We're wrapping it up. We're closing things up. We're setting up shop here in Santiago for our return back to the States. And
we still have an evil day to create, though.
We still have an evil day to create.
You're going to love what you hear and see.
So much evil, never enough good. And as we get ready to come home, we're setting up for a nice media tour. We're going to be coming all around the U.S., a bunch of other podcasts, TV, other media outlets, let everybody know what we did, how we took part in this trip, and to get you excited for season two. Yes, we're talking about a season two.
Stay tuned. We don't know if it's going to be riding around through the curry-filled lakes of India or deep into the electronic future of Japan. Hopefully, it's one of those two.
Yes, Asia is in our sights. It's in our midst. We'd love to get out there. We'd love to get a bus out there.
Or we could do Bolivia the entire second season.
No. I'll let you go to Peru instead.
No, thank you.
So be on the lookout for that. And make sure you're checking out the podcast. You're checking out the YouTube channel that's over at On The Bus Podcast. Our website at onthebuspodcast.com, where you can find everything and anything about our show, from merchandise to places to find the show to a bunch of amazing writers we have. These are previous guests we've had on the show, as well as people starting to create their own content on the bus. So be on the lookout at that, and make sure you reach out to us to find out how you can connect and collaborate with us. And first things first, you can go shop over when you get to over to onthebuspodcast.com.
That's like the third things first, but you know.
Yeah. There's no order. There's no synchronized order to how you're supposed to do that. You can go either way. Either way, all three ways. Is there a third option for?
Let's just say three is the new one and move on.
Three is the new one. Yes, that's going to be our Amazon portal over at onthebuspodcast.com. Thank you to everybody who's shopping over there. I saw someone had a really big shopping day the other day. They had to have spent like $1,000 on Amazon because we got a good day. Thank you to that person who shopped on this. I didn't know what you actually bought. I can find out if you did. We can read off what everybody buys on Amazon if you'd like that too.
Holidays are coming up? Well, we got Mother's Day. Oh, your mother. Amazon's the perfect place to buy Mother's Day gifts. You couldn't come down here to South America and buy an alpaca blanket that you can just rub on your skin and get fur on your chin every single day of the week. No, instead you can get it on Amazon.
And it's still not going to cut out your guilt trip that your mom's going to give you, no matter where you buy your gift, except on Amazon.com, because that gift's not going to be late, folks. It's going to get there on time. And if she doesn't like it, she can return it, because you know she's not going to like it. It's never good enough. So again, head over to onthebuspodcast.com. And if that's not it, if you can't find what you're looking for on there, I know the best kind of gift you can get. You can get your mom some amazing CBD oil healing properties over at greenroadsworld.com. Give your mom the gift of health this Mother's Day. Whether your mom's young, old, hurt, in shape, out of shape, there is nothing better you can give her, whether it's a better night's sleep, recovery after the gym, or just making them all around creative, reaching that homeostasis level on a daily basis. What we need, you're going to do that at greenroadsworld.com, and we are going to give you a gift for going over there and shopping. We're going to give you a 15% discount. That's On The Bus, lowercase, one word, onthebus, 15% On The Bus, Green Roads World. And thank you guys for sending over some CBD oil down to South America. You're lifesavers. That's you, Danny, and Max. No? Well, let's get into this today's show. Do we need intros?
Are you still playing right now? No, I would say just cut. Yeah, we just cut back and we'll just go. And on to today's guests.
Now, on to today's guest. We have
two psychopaths. We have two psychopaths from visiting us down here in Chile. Their names are Us.
Yes, Us. Only one name, but two people. You and S.
That's better than the Us and Them mentality. And we're the Us.
These lunatics have been driving and recording a podcast around the Americas since August. Actually, they've been recording the podcast since October 2016. And we have reached episode 60 as of today. So we're just doing this one with, no, excuse me. We're doing this one with the guest of today, us.
Us.
It's a us podcast.
I'm the guest. You're the guest. Wow. This is a great guest. Let me read off the accolades and some of the things that they've accomplished. Oh man, they've made it 6 months from Cartagena all the way down to Santiago. Almost lost a toe. 3 different stomach diseases. Giardia, Salmonella.
Friends and family convinced they're actually bus drivers.
I think we've had fights, friendships, and not that much sex on the bus.
Mm-mm. Not much at all.
No.
Mm-mm.
Depressing.
Yeah. Welcome to the life of us. So we're going to get into us.
Strap in. Yeah. I think we've already started, but strap in.
Us isn't getting into anybody, so you guys can get into us.
Okay.
What's up, us? It's just us.
When I think of podcasts now, you have to find a balance between when you're a podcaster, I feel like you have to find this balance in your voice. Like, which voice am I? Am I me naturally, or am I one of the other podcasters you listen to? Some of them are entrepreneurs and they're very rigid and structured, and it's Sam Harris asking questions that relate back to a topic. And then sometimes you've got the guy that takes you on a winding, twisting, narrow journey, catapulting you into your own psyche, where you come out the other side, you're like, what did I just hear? What did I just listen to?
Who does that? What podcast is that?
That's just Duncan Trussell.
Just only Duncan.
I mean, no, there's some great storytellers. Like Bill Burr is a fantastic podcaster. But he's a comedian. He's a comedian storyteller.
But he's also a lunatic that's aware of his lunacy and can just sit there and talk to himself and have a conversation with himself and make the most incredible jingles and the most hilarious rants.
I don't know how he talks to himself for that long.
Do you think he puts a mirror in front of himself just to talk?
How do you convince yourself to talk to yourself for that long?
Bill, we'll see you on the show.
So what do you think he does? He practices he's probably spent a lot of time practicing comedy by himself, reading his things, testing out different scripts. So it's either that or he's just a natural-born psychopath.
Natural-born psychopath. No, I think we're all psychopaths. I think we're all lunatics. I think the people who can make it into an art form that people can appreciate, those are the people that find success in entertainment. Like, oh, he completely knows how to turn on that button. He knows how to completely push that thing in himself to, you know, reach or exhibit the feelings he's trying to exhibit in his performance and his act. So those are just the people. The people are just solely aware of it.
You're all a character of yourself. Like, you're taking one of your characteristics that you have naturally, and then you expound on it and you blow it the fuck up and let everyone see a massive part of that characteristic. So like, for instance, when I'm on the bus, I've come to this realization that there are certain characteristics that I have that are extremely outlandish. So I'm like, okay, for the cameras and for the film and for what we're doing, I'm just going to become that character of myself and expound on it. I think that's just what actors and good comedians and people in show business are doing.
Oh, the microphone volume got really low right there.
Oh, I thought you were about to say the Mormons are coming for us.
Why is your microphone so low? Speak.
Hello, hello.
Huh.
Hello, hello. Is it still low? Was it always that low, or did it go low?
Talk.
Hello,
talk,
hello.
Talk. Go ahead.
Hello, hello, hello.
Well, that sounds better.
There we go.
There we
audio
go.
Technical difficulties. This is Susan speaking. How can I help you? Susan, you don't work at Audio Technical. You're a stay-at-home mother. Why are you answering the phone like that? Well, I have to get something out of my days, don't I? I stay home, I sweep, I clean, I dust, take care of the kids. It's a boring life.
60 episodes, man. Do you think we make it this far?
Well, Tim Ferriss said make it 6, so I guess we had to 10x Tim Ferriss. 60. I think 100 is the real barrier.
Yeah, that's when we go into syndication. That's when we start making the real cash.
Are we Are we making money on this? The real cash? Oh, I'm excited because everyone's been buying so much CBD oil lately. People. No, they don't know any better. Have you been playing the whole time? Are you going to cut this, edit it?
Don't ask. Now I got to go back and do it now.
Oh.
They know. The jig is up. But 60, what's your favorite?
My favorite podcast? We asked this the other day, didn't we?
Yeah.
I came down with a list of 10 and moved it down to 3. And then I came up with one. And my favorite episode is Santiago Aparicio. Which we did in Bogota. It's just his stories. They were so real. It was raw. And he had a great voice. He was well-spoken. It was just a fantastic episode.
I mean, yeah. He was probably... I wouldn't want to call him a lunatic, but he's just probably the most in his own, in himself, in his element, and just doing everything in terms of early adoption. Really, really, really interesting businessman who, you know, the Rapi company was one company I was like, wow, this is great. This is everything that someone's missing, but it's happening in Colombia. Where, hey, whatever you want to order... Order it. We'll deliver it. Condoms? No problem.
I don't understand why we don't have that in the United States.
There was an
option. They'll deliver cash.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's an option to go to an ATM and get money, no?
Yeah, no, there's an option for them to go, let's head off over to the ATM. We'll get you some cash. Don't worry. We'll press whatever buttons we need to into that machine, and we'll bring it back to you. If you need condoms, we'll get you condoms. We'll literally deliver you. Oh, dead bodies? I'll take a sea lion skull, please. Thank you. That'll be delivered. It's a fantastic business plan, and I'd like to be a part of it.
That was my favorite story, too, from the podcast, probably the condom story. He really sold the story well. And if you guys didn't hear the story, they had a presentation with Coca-Cola, and this company's completely illiquid. So they just have no money in the bank at all. Whenever they need money, they go, and they make a pitch to another company, and they get some funds, and then they're good for a while. So they do have a meeting with Coca-Cola. And there was a woman who had set up the meeting. She was not one of the board members.
She was like the
head of marketing. Yeah. And the meeting they were at, it was all old white guys, board members in the meeting. And so he figured, oh, let's do this really great thing. Let's find out what all these people order on Rapi, and let's bring in the number one thing they order. So at the board meeting, they bring in everything. All these people, some guy had a cheeseburger, some guy had Coca-Cola, because he orders that the most. And then the woman in the room, in her brown bag... She got really...
Remember, this is a patriarchal society where men basically run everything. And here you've got a woman in charge.
An old, white, men patriarchal society. And this woman, a bunch of the old men just like, hey, what's in your bag? Let's call her Susan. Hey, Susan, what's in your bag? And she's just shaking her head. Mm-mm. And... Everybody's like, no, come on. We all showed our things. What's in your bag? Mm-mm. So one of the guys grabs the bag from her.
Of course.
And just like 10 or 12 condoms just come out of the bag. This girl only used Rapi. It wasn't just the number one thing. She just used Rapi to order condoms in. To have safe sex.
He used this as the prime example. Of knowing we know our customers, and you can use us to properly brand Coca-Cola, to properly distribute and market your product through our app.
Yeah, he spun that real well.
He's a showman.
He's a real,
He's a business showman, mm-hmm. For sure.
Shaman or showman?
Showman.
Showman.
Yeah. What was your favorite episode?
I know my least favorite.
Jonathan the Monk?
Jonathan the Monk. It just wasn't fun. I don't like listening to religious people rant. And we just listened to him rant the entire time.
Yeah, he was ranting about taking, like, how he used to sell acid. It was a fascinating story.
But, I mean, I think it was also a very, very typical story of a white kid with lacking direction.
For sure, 100%.
Who goes to taking a lot of psychedelics at music festivals, falls in love with a girl. The girl breaks up with him. And he is feeling suicidal and somehow finds something that helps him connect to religion.
And when that happens at your 21 years old, like 19 years old or however old it was, like obviously it shapes your future. Obviously it shapes your mindset. So me and you felt the exact same way. Just you wanted to tell him he was a fucking To be nice.
I wanted to throw him some curveballs.
Yeah, to let him know, to let him...
Really explain his position.
Try to explain his position. Exactly. But at the same time, it still made for good content. So even though you didn't get to throw him curveballs, I still think our audience is clever enough to go back and be like, yeah, what's this guy saying right now? Minus the bad audio.
I don't think our audience... they're smart.
That's right, he's talking to you out there. Okay, apparently I'm yelling into the microphone again.
It just gets all blotchy, like it just...
That's right, I'm talking to you out there. Did I just repeat myself?
Well, now that you told him you did. I can't go back and edit.
It's Groundhog's Day. No, he might have edited us there. No, I'm gonna bring this to this thought I've had since I was a kid, right? I've always imagined there's some entity out there that's in control of our universe. You can call it God, you can call it the leader of the matrix, you can call it the creator of our computer code. I don't know what it is, but let's say there's an entity out there, and while we're some organic life form that's been created from some computer code or other entity that decided to make it 7 days of the week for I'm not sure why science, and imagine that he freezes time. Imagine we were just frozen just now for 642 billion years and we came back in the blink of an eye to us. You would never know that you were frozen in time, in some computer in some far distant land that you can't comprehend. I mean, that's just mind-blowing to me. Now, could it actually happen? I don't know. But it happened just now in a much simpler version of that when he paused the computer to edit and cut back in, and our audience never knew the difference. So that's just a much more advanced version of this. So if we can do this with our computers, with our life forms inside of this, you know, this box that's able to transmit energy and thoughts and ideas from other people across the globe and world, imagine what's capable when they can create simulated life forms. Just saying, I've been thinking about that since I was a kid.
Well, if you can think of it, then it already happened also.
What, we were frozen in time?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to me.
Well, it's what I believe. If you can project, if all these things that, for example, in this room that we're recording this podcast in, is someone's imagination, someone designed all this stuff. It was an idea in someone's head and they put it on paper and then they made it much more tangible with angles and measurements. So this right here, this dinette set, we can say right here, someone drew this up. Well, they imagined it first, and then they drew it up, and then they started putting it into production. So everything that we already are living in is a culmination of all of our imaginations, people who lived before us and people who are living now. And these are all creations.
What's nuts is it's all creations built on creations built on creations. Like some guy, like, you know, took wood thousands of years ago. It's like, oh, let's craft a thing out of this. And then and then eventually they crafted that into drawers. And then they used that idea to craft it into houses. And then the houses were crafted from all those other vortex of crafted creations by other people in previous history.
Well, it's the idea that I can make it better. I can do it better. Let me add this to that. And now it's just building on top of everybody's imagination. But again, it goes back to, is that coming from all the same entity? Is that where it's all developed and created? You want to say like the same code that eventually it stems from, you know, this code being made at one time, let's say the first humans 200,000 years ago. And then they start building, they start developing culture, they start developing civilizations, and then it gets to a time that we're just building on top of the same code or the same idea, and just the same entity. So even all this stuff right here just keeps growing and growing and growing, but it comes from the same place.
Where's that? Where do you think that is?
Where do I think it is? Oh, I don't know where it is.
That's probably the best answer. I feel that that's the exact answer I could give.
Oh, the jury's still out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know. It's not that we can't know, like, we can potentially figure it out, maybe probably not in our lifetime, but
I don't like people that know the answers, because I don't think we know the answers. If even everything that we're just thinking about, our imaginations continually improve and from things just like design, like, oh, I can make this better right here. Let me think of new ways to build on top of something that someone already built, and they just keep going and going and going and growing. So if you're going to say that this is it, this is how it is, this is how it's always going to be, it's impossible.
What I use as proof to go along with what you're just saying is that when I was younger, I used to see the world in a specific viewpoint.
When
right?
I was a boy.
When I was a young little lass. I saw the world with a specific viewpoint. And then as I got older, I realized a bunch of my thoughts and feelings about the world were either wrong or skewed in some perspective. Some were right. And then as you get along, you start to learn more about the world. Oh, because you're experiencing more, or you're going through more, or whatever it may be. But the logical conclusion I come from that is, if my previous viewpoints were wrong and skewed, then potential viewpoints now are wrong and skewed. So that means future viewpoints are wrong and skewed. So it just logically leads me to conclude that you can't figure it out, just to go along with what you're saying.
I don't even think you're wrong. I just think that's all you know at that place and that time. And what you know then isn't everything.
But that's one of the biggest issues that I see with humanity and people, is that they all think that their convictions, ideas are like flat. That's it. I feel like we see that worldview, that things are changing as they go along, and since therefore they're changing, we can't know. Whereas other people, they create a viewpoint and then they strengthen that viewpoint throughout their life.
Well, that's the difficult thing, because that's something human. That's something we created. That's the thing that makes us who we are. Trying to tell someone, you know, it's like contradictory to these people or people in general who will say, no, this is how it is. This is how it's supposed to be. This is what you're supposed to do. Oh, well, what if you're wrong? And that's not just it. You can't just find... That's just not the way it is. Think of an idea of like religion or an ideology. And okay, but then if I'm going to go tell this person how to live their life and that what they believe is wrong and that there's no improvement on it, how do you find that middle ground to say, hey, listen, you know, because the same thing goes with politics. Like, okay, if someone who believes a certain ideology or religion comes into politics and they enforce the way that we all want to learn or the way we're supposed to adapt or the way we're supposed to come into our lives is living a certain way or respecting certain ideals or values. Again, it's like tough to find a middle ground. So it's like all coming to an agreement as a human species, or just it's what civilization is. Like, oh, these are the rules. Okay, we're not going to kill people. Okay, we're not going to rape anybody. I think most societies and cultures are going to agree on those two points. You don't do those two things
at this point.
At this point in time, I completely agree. It's not
even like 60 years ago. No.
This is just what we finally come to an agreement on. But you know, rock could hit the earth.
Everything changes.
The ice caps could melt. Some crazy, ridiculous event could happen, and everything that we know, all the ideas, everything that we think about, rules, ideologies, just could be. Are completely out the window then.
So let me ask you something. Let's say you meet a kid. He's 20 years old, and he was extremely religious. We'll say a sect of like Mormon, for instance. You meet a 20-year-old Mormon, and his worldview is sort of being slightly skewed and altered.
We're talking about the kids we bought the bus from?
Yeah, that's exactly who I had in mind. But let's say that he's on the fence about his idea. What would you say to convince him that, you know, about the world?
Or nothing. I wouldn't try and convince him.
You wouldn't to move away from religion? Or you're just going to poke fun at the universe?
It's not my place to convince anybody. I don't want to tell
someone.
What
if he comes to you and asks for advice? I
don't want to tell someone at all how to live their human experience.
Well, that's an advice, though. Hey, I don't want to tell someone.
Yeah,
I don't want to tell you how to live your
human
experience.
We can have a discussion about it, even though a lot of discussions I have with people, either I come off very offensive and very ridiculely or sarcastic.
Yeah, and when it comes to religion and politics, for sure.
Well, because I just want to point that you can make a mockery of this, and I want people to poke holes and make things at me. Like, if you make a joke about what I think, what I believe, I'm gonna laugh alongside with you, because probably if it's a great point and something ridiculous that I think, I completely agree. I'm gonna slap you on the back and say, "You got me."
It is a mockery, though. I mean, it comes back to just not knowing. I think everyone just is so sure of everything. So.
But it's also not being, you got to be okay about it. I can definitely say I get offended, upset. I have a strong, strong ego. And even if someone makes a point at me sometimes, there's a natural tendency to take that as offensive and like get really aggressive and mad on the inside and tense up for a second. Like, oh, I'm just talking with somebody. I'm just having a conversation. There's no reason for me to get pissed off or upset. That's it. And just, oh, okay, let me be a little rational, take this point in.
It's a weird balance between knowing that this is like an animal response mechanism versus knowing also like having the mental capability of recognizing that it's not the right, that is an animal response mechanism and it's not the right response. No, he didn't cut and freeze us in time right there. That was an actual phone drop. Don't worry. We didn't stop for the last 650 billion years just to record this podcast.
I just didn't know what your next point was. I know where you're going. It's animal mechanism.
No. I constantly, because what you're saying makes so much sense, but at the same time, it's like, why would you get mad? Like, obviously you're able to look back and understand that it is the ego, that it is sort of, that you're getting mad for some specific reason that you probably shouldn't, that someone made a good point, and that it's just like you're mentally like trying to accept that. But your natural response is to get mad, fight or flight. Like, those are natural responses is what I'm saying. Like, that had evolutionary benefits to you. It's just been misplaced. And it's weird to understand that and then go back later and be like, oh yeah, I shouldn't have done that. But still in the moment, you still experience it and feel it. Like, you still, if you're driving a car, right? Some people are good drivers. Like, you can see, like, you pay attention to other people on the road. You know four moves ahead before you make any move. Yeah, but
describe good driving. Is that staying alive?
But not like hitting other people? You're acutely aware. That's like your body's in some, in like, imagine, I imagine it's something like you're being aware of lions chasing after you, like, you know, thousands of years ago. But now it's been converted over to, I'm driving in the road, I need to be aware of like steps ahead of me. But some people aren't experiencing that. Some people are literally not going through that on a day-to-day basis. And no, I'm not Bill Burr and can't sit here and talk to myself for 45 minutes. I would lose my mind. I can't sit in front of a camera and talk to myself. Like, how does he sit and give comedic value? You really have to be self-depreciating. Which I think
you've
is
already lost your mind. Accept it. You can talk like that.
Self-depreciation is probably the key. But he's able to like look at his flaws probably, and the flaws that he sees about the world, and then just kind of spin off into his own dungeons about what's going on inside, and then share that and connect with people on a comedic level. And you?
Number one thing you're excited for to get back home.
I've actually pondered this a few times, but I would say Whole Foods. go food shopping, get quality foods in my stomach. I don't know if the people out there know, but I have giardia. It hasn't really left, so I've been on and off sick. And just to eat, you know, good quality food would be very nice. You know, what about yourself?
Hold on, do us a favor and describe giardia, because I don't think a lot of people know what it is.
Yeah, so giardia is a, I don't know if it's a protozoa or a bacteria, but it goes inside your intestines. You get it mostly from contaminated water, from fecal matter, from people not washing their hands when they cook for you, from drinking bad water, one of those things. And it goes inside your stomach and it gives you light bouts of diarrhea, stomach bloating, ab pain. So it feels like I've done like heavy weighted abs at the gym like every single day for the past week. And then this thing goes in your stomach, it plants itself, it forms a crystal around your, around itself and like plumps itself right there. And, you know, it should be a simple fix, like antibiotics for 5 to 10 days, 2 weeks, this thing gets out of your stomach, whatever. But actually in most people, it takes like a few months for their intestine to get repaired. So right now, my intestine isn't doing too well. Really repaired, I don't think.
You don't realize the amount of damage that stuff does to your immune system and the amount of recovery. I mean, even like with the month of antibiotics that I was taking for my toe. I mean, you even tell me you're lucky to have your toe.
Yeah, you really are.
Am I?
Bob Marley died from a cut on tour on his foot that he never took care of. That's all I could think about every time I
looked at
your
foot. Deeper than his too.
So, I mean, why don't you tell people about your toe experience, about the time that you spent in the actual hospitals and like what you was going through your head when the first doctor was like, fungus.
Yeah, I don't think I told the story to many people, but I had set up after we did the whole sandboarding tour where the cut happened and the dune buggies, I jump in the pool and my toe is just on fire. And I thought I definitely broke it because I couldn't see any cut at the time. I have our EMT Max take a look at it, and he sees this giant laceration cut that goes from inside the pinky toe and the ring toe all the way around to the outside of the toe. And I mean, there was just sand all inside. It was really dirty. And I know infections and bacteria infections are like the number one way to, you know, lose limbs and die. I was really nervous when I had surgery 2 years ago. So I head over to the hospital. I'd set up a Pisco wine tour tasting. So I send all these guys out there. No, you guys go. I'm going to head over here. Blum, take care of it. You got it. And the hospital was even the more of the interesting experience.
So yeah.
Ica, Peru. I get to the hospital, and as soon as I get there, they send me over to the room, I guess, that deals with cuts. And right before I got there, some child had just got there right before me, and he had just blown up fireworks in his face. So he had fireworks exploded in his face, like around his chest. There were pools of blood because there really was no waiting room. You were sitting right outside the door, the curtain to the room that the kid was in. It wasn't a very advanced hospital. It wasn't that clean. I mean, there were pools of blood from the child, like outside the room, like three distinct pools of blood. And I mean, everybody out there, because of you're just waiting in the hallway, hit most of the kid's family and friends and, you know, family friends were just all crying, just there. I mean, there was really no even medical treatment this kind of facility had to deal or treat with this kid. That he had eventually had to go, they had to drive him to Lima, which was like a 4-hour drive.
Jeez.
So I think they were just wrapping ACE bandages around him, maybe putting some aloe or some kind of like alcohol on it, but that would like burn as fuck. And I mean, I even started crying at one point. It was just everybody around you was crying, and it wasn't even about everybody else crying. It was just listening to another human that no one could help. It's 2018 and everybody is just, the child's helpless and we all feel helpless that we can't help this other human, and you just couldn't help but start crying. And it was just, after traveling on a bus and doing everything we had done already and already being so drained and tired, it just emotionally pulled you down even more. And then it was my turn after they get the kid out and they wheel him out. And I go into the room and they're...
Lowly old me with a missing toe.
It's my turn. And they go, they pass me a piece of paper. And they say, okay, you need to go get these things. This is all in Spanish too. And I wouldn't say my Spanish was sharp yet at the time. And so I had to go out of the hospital and head over to all the pharmacies. And I had to go pick up syringes, alcohol, gauze pads, everything they were going to need to operate on the toe. You know, and inject it with some local anesthesia in between the toes and everything. So I had to go out and get those things and then bring them. I had to go buy all the things I needed for them to operate on me, then bring them back in. And then I got laid on the table. And as I lay on the table, it was like a chiropractic looking table with black padding. And there was like foam. So a piece of the leather padding was torn off. And I'm wondering why it's all wet. And that's where my face was laying. And I was like, oh, this is probably all the blood because it was red and brown from the kid from right before me because it was still very wet.
And there's probably only one table in there.
And I was laying with my face like right near this, like staring down at it while this guy is shooting a needle between my toes and stitching in between my toes. And he did the worst stitch job ever. But the story doesn't end there. We get to Cusco. And once we get to Cusco, this other doctor in a different hospital is like, oh yeah, you don't need stitches. You have a fungus infection. So I'm like, oh fuck, the thing's already infected. Damn it. This is the worst news ever.
And I'm in there looking at his toe and I'm like, what do you mean a fungus? Like, I'm with him. What do you mean a fungus infection?
And she's like, well, you don't even need stitches. This thing will be healed in 2 or 3 days. I mean, this cut was pretty deep. It was pretty wide. And I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I'm going to take your advice on it, you know?
I'm a doctor.
You're a doctor. It's a house of learning doctors. I'm gonna bite my tongue on this one. I'm going to take in what the doctor says. I'm not going to argue and ask deep questions. So she takes the stitches out. We get some fungus cream, and I rest for 2 days. Now, anybody who knows about cuts, you're supposed to keep them as dry as possible so the skin can heal. So she had me rubbing fungal cream and taking some heavy antifungal medicine that was really, really tough on the stomach. So 2-3 days go by. This cut's not getting any better at all.
I mean, I was looking at it every day. I would say it was getting worse is what I would say.
So I head over to the hospital, and of course that doctor's not there, and I'm just demanding, can you please just stitch this thing up? I just want it stitched up. It's the only way to heal this. We got to stitch this thing up. End of story. And the doctor on the scene was also looking at this thing in a dental chair at this point. You weren't in that room. It was in a dentist chair. Classic. When he was looking at it. And he says,
that's a good sign for at least they have dentists there.
Now we need to get a plastic surgeon in here. And the plastic surgeon needs to recut open the cut inside of the cut. We got to cut it open. We got to get it bleeding again so all the tissues can really start sticking and healing together. And I was just like, so listen, can you do this? It's like, well, I can only do it, but only in emergency situations. No, I'm asking you. Can you do this? Are you good enough to perform this operation on me? Oh, no, sir, I can do this. Let me do this. I'm like, all right. Dr. Kevitz. Kevitz, that's his name. So Dr. Kevitz takes me in the room. They had some.
Was he under 30? He seemed pretty young.
Under 30. He had some local anesthesia there. So they inject me up between my toes again. I don't know how heroin addicts just inject themselves between their toes knowingly. I'm doing this laying
on
my...
heroin addict injects himself between their
toes? Well, because they don't have veins anymore that they can find on their body to inject the heroin in.
Yeah, because at that point, they're so far... If you make it to the point where you need to inject heroin in your toes, you're so far gone. You don't need to fucking care whether you... Jeez.
Listen, you just don't want to get injected between your toes. End of story. So, Dr. Kivitz performs a successful surgery on it. I can just feel him, even though the toe is really numb, he's like pulling it apart, the pinky toe. Yeah, yeah, hey, we got some blood going. It's looking good. Yeah, you're looking real good back here. They restitch it up, and I think it was the longest I've ever had stitches in my body for about a month. I think I just recently took out the stitches when
you
I was
had
in
them
Korea.
In a really long time. And that thing would. Oh, it would like close a little bit. You'd see like white. Oh, it's going to close. And then like the next day it'd be back open. And then, oh, it's going to close. It's going to close. And it'd be back. Oh, it's scabbed. Oh, and then the scab's gone and it's open again.
It was in a really unique spot. Really, I mean, just on the pad under the toe. You know, not a place that gets to stay dry all the time. And it's not a place that, you know, if you're walking at all, it's going to be tearing. It's going to be opening up constantly. Just in the way the pad of your foot and your toes bend with every step. So... I just took a lot of antibiotics, you know, there was no points that it looked really infected except that 2 or 3 days when they said I had a fungal infection, but I was literally getting it wet and sleeping in a hostel. So, I mean, a perfect place for you to die of infectious disease.
Yeah.
So I beat all those infections. The toe is stitched back up now. I'm exercising again. Couldn't be happier.
Do you think if you know for season two, which we would like to do and plan to do, do you think that we should have an ENT or some future medical advice?
No. Listen, I'm just going to be back in the U.S. and I'm going to run the show from there, so everything stays smooth from there. Oh, Blum needs an airdrop of MCT. Let me call in an air vac, and they come down and they send you guys a parachute of supplies. That way. Got someone legit on the ground.
The best thing I did was buy the World Nomads health insurance for this thing because I've been sick the entire time, and they give you everything back. I'm gonna get back all my visits. I'll get back hotels, food from some of these places, from everything that I've spent.
I was kind of hoping you were gonna get air vac'd out. I wanted to see how they'll process and how it happened.
They would have air vac'd me out if I needed to.
I wanted to see the process and how it happened. Are they gonna send a chopper in there, or are they gonna get you on an airplane?
Everyone wanted me to get air. Oh, come home. Even your mom there was with us. She's like, "It's okay, Daniel. You can go home."
Is it okay? Should we have crapped out or
no?
Thrown the towel in. Everybody was saying, "Like, listen, been gone for a while.
If not,
it's okay."
The thing is if honestly, I might have even got home if not everyone said, "Oh, it's okay, come home." It's because people were saying, "Come home." Then I'm like, no, we're not going fucking home.
I mean,
if my mom was like, "Keep going, no, don't worry, keep going," I'd have been like, "Okay, I'm coming home, Mom. I'll see you at home. I'm coming home now. Don't worry."
How much farther can we go?
Well, I hate to say it because I'd like to keep going, but I think our bodies are really depleted. Like, we're much skinnier. We like to work out. It's there are certain things that we...
I could come off so many ways. We like to work out.
There's a lot of things we hope to accomplish out of this trip, and we accomplished more than what we expected to accomplish. But at the same time, there's some things we set out that we didn't accomplish. Those are mostly health things, honestly. Like, we were planning to show that we could work out while we're traveling abroad, right? That we could do this regularly. We could work out, enjoy a healthy lifestyle. But the everything came except the healthy lifestyle part. I mean, how often did you get to work out? I got a question for you. What do you think is missing most from you for this trip? Physically.
Focus. I think, like you said, we've accomplished way more and we've taken on way more than we possibly can, I think, in other interviews or people I've talked to. Like, what's the one thing you wish you knew? A lot of people ask that question, that you knew before you started the trip, or wish you did before you started the trip. And my number one thing is not being such a yes man and not being so goddamn competitive. Like, oh no, we can do these videos. Everybody, you guys are getting 4 videos out a week. End of story. No ifs, ands, or buts. And we got to get 2 podcasts out a week. And we got to do this. And we got to get this bus here by a certain date and set up these interviews and try and connect with all these people, with, you know, not really having someone back on the ground in the U.S. doing that for us. And
that's the key. I think there's 2 keys in there. Not having someone back in the U.S. doing it for us. And there's too many things along the road that stop it, that you can't help.
Yeah. I don't think I really, on this trip, like, just had days where I just didn't work. I couldn't help myself. And I'm doing something, whether it's on social media, editing, video editing, uploading. There was no day where I just did nothing. Couldn't help myself.
So is that what you're excited for the most when you get back home, to do nothing?
No, because like I'm not going to do nothing.
It's a trick question.
I mean, think about all the things that we want to do. I mean, we want to get all these people that are riding with on the bus to, you know, start churning out even more articles. By the way, go check out the blog section. I think all of those guys and girls who
they're writing
for us,
fantastic articles. They really are.
Megan, Colby, Zach.
Explain what we want to accomplish from that. I think it's a fantastic thing we're trying to do. We're trying to give creatives a chance to have their voice without sort of an editor.
Absolutely. These, you know, our show, you know, if you want to say we start with this podcast itself, you know, it's really as much as we have topics and we, you know, look to have conversations and spout out all these different ideas and with the guest and what these guests have interesting takes and ideas about, you know, we want to have, you know, as free form and open of a source to express and to educate others and to connect with others and people to get new ideas on things in the most free space possible. So, you know, we have our blog section and a lot of these people have been guests on our show, you know, from Zach Weinberg, who's the, what would you call him?
Just the head of new media for Ziggy Marley and the Bob Marley
Estate. And the head of the estate of Bob Marley. And, oh, this is one person I want to hear talk about music. And I don't mind what his opinion is, because I'm trying to get an expert or someone who has a lot of experience in the field's take of what they think about whether it's reggae music or whether it's something that's going on with digital media, whether it's something going on with what's the thing? Streaming versus downloads. How do you get this? And where's the economic value in each and one of these things? Is it positive for the music industry? And I just shouted off like 7 or 8 different ideas that hopefully this person can give me a different take and opinion on.
Yeah, it's cool to hear the opinion of someone within the industry who really understands and get their true opinion piece. You know, what they're really feeling, how they correlate to other things that are going on.
Yeah, and I want to, again, tell these people how to write. So we have... I'm no expert writer at all myself, so that's not my place, not my position, but I want to give these people the opportunity, and I want them, you know, I'm just honored that they want to be able to write and create some content under the On the Bus Productions umbrella. So we even have some other people who are going to start, you know, creating some original content, and that'll probably be on our YouTube channel, and they'll start making some original videos. And, you know, again, anybody out there looking to collaborate, we got a this really great Australian blogger who's doing a whole Euro trip this summer. He's going to be writing about his entire experience for On the Bus Productions as well. That's Faz Travel _Faz. Shout out to Faz. And yeah, I'm excited about all those things. Really growing the overall, you know, production and content creation over at On the Bus. So I'll be writing videos, a podcast network, you know, people creating fitness on the bus, travel on the bus. And, you know, whether these podcasts are going to be 8 to 10 minutes long, whether they're going to be hour, hour and a half long, I want these people to come in. I want them to really give some positive and really engaging content that people can take for whatever it's worth and use whatever they want to take from it. I'm not telling you how to live the life. It's, hey, wow, I like this show because I can listen to it at minute 1 through 5. I can listen to it from minute 18 through 27, and I'm going to get something good. I'm going to get something positive. I'm going to get something to take out of it. I'm going to laugh. I'm going to cry. Whatever they want, that's for them to take, decide from it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Brandon and I have been saying that we're early adopters, we're incubators, and we have taken the steps to prove that. Not only to prove it, but if we believe that the world is going to evolve into a place where robots are going to be taking our jobs, then we believe that the creatives are the ones who are going to run the earth. And we've took the first steps to connect these creatives on a more liquid basis. We've talked about this a few times on the podcast. We've talked about this in interviews and what the goal is from what we're doing here. This is the first step. Connect those people. Not only is this movement coach doing fitness with his clients in Miami, but now he's also writing, and then he's able to collaborate with other movement coaches, other scientists. He's able to start his own podcast. He's able to redo things that connect him to the world in a much more liquid way. I've been saying this, but I really think that, you know, we've reached a state of hardware collaboration, and now we're going to reach software collaboration via phones, but now we're going to reach a state of hardware collaboration. For us, we're the early adoption right now, and we're trying to connect the other early adopters. I'm super excited for this chapter of On the Bus Productions, because I think it's like the next chapter of humanity.
That's bold.
It's very bold, Cotton. Show him what he's won. I had to make a bold step there. People were really starting to dissipate through my voice.
How is that going to correlate for me? I don't care about anybody else listening right now.
Sure. So think about this. Right now, in order to get work done, most of people are doing work from their house. Some people go to their job and work with their clients. A few people work remotely and get to travel, the lucky ones. What about the people who want to do all of those things? They want to travel, work with other people in other industries. What about a movement coach who wants to do what it would be like to do movement on Mars? Well, we want to be able to collaborate that person with the scientist, you know, Dr. Scott Solomon, and do research together. So to me, that's the next step. It's a connecting unconnected dots and having them work towards the future. If we're moving away from this sort of segmented, rigid, location dependent sort of lifestyle into location independent, travel and work wherever, collaborate in any city, work with whoever you can, write, blog, do videos, be a creative while also having a job and working with people, we want to be that. And here's another thing is, I think in the past, everything was hierarchical in the sense of there were a few large companies that sort of ran everything. And then top down, there were some small, medium-sized businesses. And then there were small businesses in small cities and, you know, obviously in larger places. But now I really think we're taking away that hierarchy with shared economies, especially because of the shared economy. But an example is there's tons of more small businesses that are, everything is getting smaller and smaller. You're going to have a specialist to help you do everything. You're going to have a specialist to help with your movement, with your breathing, with your meditation. You have access to all those people and all those things now. So now you're getting a specialist in your life. And it's sort of, to me, going to be a natural toppling of the corporate ideology, minus the fact that some giant corporations just still exist that run everything, like Google and Amazon.
They still, I mean, think about Pepsi. Pepsi owns everything.
Well, the major ones are not going away. Yeah, Pepsi owns, Pepsi Nestle? Oh, God.
Nestle's the worst.
Nestle.
I just still can't believe they can get away with privatizing water. Water is not a human right. You have to pay me. I'm going to buy the water source. And then you have to pay me.
Be honest with yourself. You really learn to respect water once you've been in South America. We take that shit for granted in America. Like, it's in every sink. It's fine. It's no problem. Here, you have to, like, boil in 90% of the places you are.
I mean, tap water is great anywhere you go, except Flint, Michigan, the U.S. I mean...
Bring Flint, Michigan people down here. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, they get a taste of Bolivia, if you want to say it, in their water all the time.
Yeah.
But it's what you said about the, you know, corporate ideology. It's interesting, you know, with these co-working spaces and places for people to go in and, you know, work on their own schedule as long as they still get their job done. You know, it's not really much. I don't think. I think that, you know, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to put a beer keg in the office on Fridays.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's going to make people happy.
Two different types of beer on tap.
It's like little ways that they can just nudge these employees just a little bit.
But it's a slow movement. Like, you're not tomorrow going to have the world change. It's a slow movement. To me, it's signs of life. Like, that's the sign.
I still think it's bullshit. I think it's...
We're the next step, though.
Yeah, but...
Think about it.
We can say we're the next step, but I think people, you know, who...
We work on wheels.
Who, you know, work in an office and they say, oh, yeah, we got pods in the office. We get to take naps in the office. Like, it's like, is that someone really looking out for you? Or just saying, oh, hey, I can get more work out of this human being for my own benefit.
As a business, it's still an entrepreneur and a business idea. That's a fucking good company. So, oh, yeah, that's a smart idea. Let's make them think they're working less when they're working more.
But that's exactly the point. Like, oh, yeah, my company, they give us pods. You know what they have? They have Whole Foods come in and cater on Tuesday. Oh, yeah. Does your office do that?
Blackened salmon. If they have Whole Foods caters me blackened salmon on Tuesdays, that company, as long as I don't need dental, I don't need insurance, just, I'm sold. And wormwood.
These people like own you though. Like, oh, hey, we're gonna give you dental. We're gonna give you insurance.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They make it so you never want to leave. They make it so you can't leave. There's permissionless innovation. Here's something super, super fascinating. I don't remember what podcast I was listening to, but they were talking about the difference between Boston and San Francisco and why one became so vibrant and the other didn't reach the level, obviously San Francisco being the much bigger one, because in San Francisco, in Boston, they made you sign NDAs and essentially made it very difficult for you to switch businesses. You would lose out on salary, you'd lose money, you weren't allowed to share information. So you ended up staying with one company, you stay in the sort of corporate structure. In San Francisco, they don't have NDAs. You're allowed to leave all willy-nilly. And what happened when that is the companies are trying to constantly pool talent from other companies. So you do work 6 months here, you get sucked to another company, you could bring everything you learned from there over here, and now you can get paid a shit ton more money. So because of this little NDA structure, it created hyper competition and much higher salaries out in San Francisco. And it didn't in Boston. So what happens when you have hyper competition and big salaries? Well, you draw in the better talent pool. So now the new people coming in that are better, when they have to choose between Boston and San Francisco, well, they're going to get paid a shit ton more money and can have freedom of travel between jobs, job velocity. And so that created this microeconomy of why San Francisco is where it is compared to Boston. Both of them were equal talent pools at one point and equal in the startup community world.
Boston.
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 Boston, Texas or Austin, Massachusetts?
Oh. Austin, Massachusetts.
I don't know when that time was. The same pool of talent, but maybe it was before 1968, 1963. And the drugs started kicking in.
It was ether. Oh, no, wait, that's Ethereum.
The psychedelic movement out there.
Yeah.
And then we could talk about blockchain, how that's going to... But we don't want to ramble off about all those things.
To go back to what you were saying, I think it's interesting. It's interesting how like one little... spec can help create a catapult, what do you call it? A domino effect. And that's kind of how I view corporate structure and the way that the world is at the current juncture.
Well, I think that's only the case is because there's still never, ever, ever going to be a balance because the amount of imperfection that human beings have and that we possess. For sure. So, I don't know. Still can't get over the job thing. Could you work in an office?
No, I never could. But what you can't get over the job thing. I can't get over. Like, I have friends who say to me, "Oh, I love what you're doing. I could so do that, you know." But my job, I'm making a bunch of money at my job, and my job. Do you actually want to do it? Like, do they actually want to do it, or are they just like the thought of saying they want to do it? You know, do people actually want to do these things, or they just like dreams that they can never accomplish? I don't know.
For me, I've just haven't had a normal work schedule and structure
ever
since like Kuwait. I had in Kuwait, but even like it's just been so long. I don't even know, you know, what are you supposed to do on a Wednesday now? Because like Wednesdays for me just could be do nothing today.
Simple answer. Crypto trade.
Crypto trade.
Honestly, the people who are trading crypto are the ones without normal job structures because they don't have that 9-to-5 lifestyle. They can wake up and be like, oh, let me see what cool is going on in the world.
Especially
today.
If you hate Korean markets and just know when to sell and dump all your cash. Because
well, if you've been in the game long enough, you hate Korean markets.
Not Korean coins, just the Korean government and the regulations.
Oh, I was thinking Koreans because they wake up and do the opposite of what you're hoping they do whenever you need them.
I started
to
monitor that when I was over in Korea and Japan, and I really picked up on that. Just like, oh, there goes the market. Up, oh, now it's down.
Is there a different, when you were over there, did you get a sense of a different sort of culture that would lead you to any thoughts about the crypto or, you know, the way that their culture is, that have any impact?
It's way more digitized in terms of, you know, everything's just on your card or your phone. You know, oh, you want to go someplace? It's literally, you know, you think you got the subway in New York. Even the subway in New York, they have to like swipe. It's not just put your thing up to a reader. And I mean, you could have everything, whether people have wallets on the back of their phone now and your card's there or a chip's there or in a taxi too. I mean, no one carried, you carried cash, but like it was like silly to wear cash. Like, oh, paid. All right, let's go. Like everything just worked at a much, much faster rate in terms of a lot of things were just, I know technology is not embraced better, but the idea of, you know, not futurism, but, you know, all these different gadgets and robots are something I would say admired or even, what's the word for like a superhero? It's like dramatized and people really draw fascination to all that stuff. So it's, you know, taken into a lot of things around, from simple ways of paying to, you know, the robot restaurant I was at or robot serving your food or just not having a waiter or waitress at places. It's just a vending machine. You say what you want. Okay, I want a pork katsu with curry. Push the button. I get a ticket. I just hand it to a man in the kitchen and I have food already ready.
Don't you think that's going to help them get into the future?
Japanese curry.
But that's a negative on a Western culture. Like that they're so fascinated by those things means they're going to attempt to bring us there quicker.
Well, that's like the thing with Vitalik Buterin in the interview on Vice. I've been saying that for the longest time, that quote he said about jobs. Oh, we're not getting rid of jobs. We're making better ones. Or we're just what was the exact quote?
Pull it out. Jamie, tell me who's on.
But anyways, like, yeah, we're like a lot of people are worried that technology is going to ruin all these jobs and we're not going to have a place. And what are we going to do? Because you listen to politicians in elections, it's jobs, 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 jobs. We're going to get you jobs. But listen, are we always going to need air traffic controllers? No shout out to you guys, but, you know, air traffic controlling. I mean, maybe if we can find a better job or you think of an idea of universal basic income. I know a lot of people have varying different ideas or takes about what it's going to do and if it's positive or negative, but it's experimentation. I mean, it's a big experimentation for us to ask for us to go out and do. But if we can find a way for people to make money and have more time and freedom within their own lives to go do the things that they want to do, whether that's them being creative, you can even say the idea of San Francisco with the NDAs, like, okay, now people can actually leave and go to different jobs and take the ideas they got from one place and bring them to another. They're going to enhance the value of whatever's happening over at a different place, whether they had no idea that they could possibly do something here. So having this much more free movement of people, no, I'm not for tearing down borders. I think we still need borders and imaginary lines. As much as I do hate those imaginary lines on a goddamn map.
For now.
So if we can find new ways to have people start creating their own jobs, they can find not even more value for society itself, but they can give themselves more of a purpose on an everyday basis of who they are and what they want to do. while at the same time, like I just mentioned, giving value to society. Because obviously, if we want to create our own jobs, we want to find a way to make money, we have to find ways for people to gain value in the skill or the business or the kind of potential that we want to provide to other people. So it's there. We can do it all. And again, I was saying this before Vitalik. Let's get that straight.
Yeah, but he might have been thinking it. He might have been thinking it.
Here's the quote. He says he's the destroyer of jobs and creator of better ones. Been saying that.
But he's the actual destroyer. But he's the actual destroyer. He's the man who created the destruction.
I will give him
tool.
That he's more of a destroyer than I am. As much as I am the Charlie Brown meme.
You are a destroyer. We are also destroyer. What we're doing here is to me revolutionary. So it's not at scale though. He's created something that's revolutionary at scale. That's going to disrupt the entire planet. Whereas ours is too, but just in a slower time.
He's much more of a Jesus. I don't even want to call us a Jesus, but I mean, what we had to do was be examples. We had to be examples that, you know, if you want to go do these things, if you want to find a way to be profitable, if you want to find a way to go out and do something that everybody says you can't do, there's no way that you can take something from this. There's no way that all these things that we're shaping and molding and bringing people in from all around the world who want to work with us and even live with us on this thing, and we're doing it all, we're making it all happen. It, you know, it's just like the, there's an amazing book about a play that was launched. It was a Russian group and it was launched in Paris, and it was literally, this guy describes in the book, as the making of the modern world because of all the abstract and very odd ideas that were in this play. People in Paris were booing, and London they were booing because of the reaction. Some people were crying, some people were happy. All they're called Rites of Spring. It was all these different intrinsic things that was like forcing on people to act and feel and be upset on things. I didn't think I have a quote about it. But anyways, it was appreciated and taken in different places. Hated in some, the old world, Paris, London, hated it. Germany, loved it. Russia, loved it. And so if you want to say like these old, not old world, new world, but even like Germany coming into a republic in 1870s, and this is like 1900s right there. So they're finally coming on. They're finally united as an entire country and really coming on the scene. And when you get Germans united on something, I mean, they go gung ho on it.
Yeah, I've seen them united on your milk's missing from the fridge.
Well, you can even say, look, think about Germany in World War II. Even after, you know, they formed the Third Reich, they have all these things. They've still become the central dominant power in Europe, despite having gone through two world wars in the past 100 years, that they're still a very, very ingenuitive people.
Extremely. And not only that, but they cut off the head of some of its intellect during that time frame, and they've still come out thriving this much. So I just imagine a world in which they hadn't done that. The same thing as if, you know, look what's going to happen with Venezuela. Like, they're going to be depleted for 100 years from now. It's the opposite, you know?
Here's that quote I was about to say before. A good question forces someone to think and experience emotion. It's not your job to worry what emotions they experience.
And now a reading from Pablo Neruda's Book of Questions.
That's from Brandon. That's a Brandon Reese quote. Vitalik, you can't take that one.
Said here first.
It's time stamped. It's on the internet. It's on a node. It's done. You can't beat it.
Beautiful.
Episode 60, man. 60 episodes.
In the book. Chile.
They keep getting better.
That's right. We'll be here another 2 weeks. We'll be recording some more podcasts from here. We have some great guests lined up. I am going to Argentina after. Brandon may be joining, but we have some guests lined up in those countries as well.
So very pumped, very excited. You know, to say that this trip's coming to a close, but also, you know, how we can close it out and how we can really brandish this thing for a big, big, big step into our next process, our next trip, and everything we're working towards after we head home. So thanks to you guys, you know. If we didn't have people listening, if we didn't have people following, if we have people, all the people we've talked to on Instagram, the people we've reached out to, your messages have all been incredible. They've been beautiful. It's great to know that we have that many people out there, you know, the few thousand we've talked to who are, I love what you do.
Yeah.
You know, some really, really amazing messages. So
it's amazing. Really.
Thank you to you guys. It's so great. Glad to know we have this network and we have these people that watch and listen to everything we do.
If you made it this far, first of all, I'm extremely proud of you for making it this far. That means that my voice isn't as horrible sounding as I think it is. Or maybe Brandon's is just that sweet. But if you made it this far and you haven't clicked the little cloud to download this episode, now is the time. Click the download. We really need that statistic.
At the end of this episode, if you haven't done
if you haven't clicked, listen, you made it this far, that means you listen. You like our show. You like who we are, you like what we talk about.
If you're gonna keep just listening, we know you
for
love
us.
It.
Yeah. Just for us. There's a little cloud right there. Maybe you don't even know you're supposed to click it. If you haven't clicked it 60. If you haven't clicked it 60 times, click it 60 times. We appreciate you.
And guys, make sure you check out all of our other content on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. That's all at On the Bus Podcast. And please reach out to us. Let us know what you think of the show, how we can improve, what you like, what you don't like. We always literally like taking in other people's opinion. We get better from hearing feedback. We get better from listening to what you guys have to say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. We're going to tune this one out. Shout out to Green Roads World. Shout out to Amazon. Thank you, everybody who does shop and use all those amazing options. And make sure for Green Roads World, using promo code on the bus, ONTHEBUS. That's lowercase, all one word. And the Amazon portal, that's going to be at onthebuspodcast.com on the main homepage.
Yes.
Make sure you're clicking. Make sure you're shopping through there. And thank you to everybody who has been shopping through that. Thank you to all of our Kickstarter people, too. I mean, this year's coming to a close, but thank you to everybody who has sent us cash, who has pledged all this money, and who has just continued to give us feedback on how to improve. All 151 of you, right? 150 people?
I think it's less than that.
Less than that?
It's 124.
124. Thank you so much. Episode 60. We made it this far. We're going to see you at 120. Next step.
Bolivian truck.
For those who...